You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Studio One, yeah. I was up in Sacramento for a couple days, back home. And then fly out tomorrow for North Carolina. Go to the change of command of General Furness, so I'm excited about that. Get to see my son, my daughter-in-law, my grandson. But I fly back the next day.
Uh-huh.
Tomorrow going to be an early day. Up at 3. Out of the house at 3:45, drive up to LAX, fly to Atlanta, hop over to Jacksonville, iron a shirt, go to a change of command. I got to see if I can, my son has an ironing board on base, or Jeff Kenny's staying there. He'll be at the change of command. So go to the change of command, hang out, and then head down and see my daughter-in-law, my grandson. Hang out with them in the morning, and then go to the airport and fly back. Yeah. But, no, the last couple years, what an experience General Furness is. He's kind of my partner in post-traumatic winning. He's been the guy who's opened a lot of doors and validated the concept behind it. And there's nobody further down the road in terms of doing this, in my opinion, than the Second Marine Division. I think they understand the truth. And now the question is, what do you have to do to sustain it? How do you keep it in front of young people whose attention span aren't that long, right? How do you elevate your leadership to... Once you understand the path, you know, to keep people on that path. And so really, for most of the Marine Corps, the people that do the counseling on a monthly basis are themselves junior Marines, right? Lieutenants, sergeants, staff sergeants, right? So you have, you know, junior Marines counseling other junior Marines. So how do you elevate the performance of your junior leaders to get them to leadership 401 and get them out of 101 and 201. So, and the Second Marine Division is, you know, they're wrestling with that stuff. So it'll be exciting. And in the last 2 years, the history of that was after he took command, I want to say they had 4 suicides in 3 months or 3 suicides in 4 months. And that's when he reached out and said, hey, I know you're working on something. I'd like you to come back and do it. And then really, they went through a period where they had 1 suicide in 11 and a half months, so which is astounding. And so, those numbers have gone back up. And I think when you pull them apart, the COVID thing has something to do with it, because the Twin Towers that post-traumatic winning fights are ignorance and isolation. Ignorance in the literal sense, in that we just don't know. You know, no, I mean, nobody tells you this stuff. I didn't know it until I started doing this as really a full-time job. And then over the course of 4+ years, I've been fortunate to run across people like Jack Riley and Ken Rogers and Bob Nielsen and all kinds. And then even my friends, as my friends have kind of gone down this road with me, they think about this stuff and they'll call me up and they'll talk. Or even just like when I was just in Montana hanging out with Montana Man and F-18 Man. You know, all of a sudden we're having a discussion about happiness. Yeah, what? whoa. We're going to talk about what? Yeah, we're going to talk about happiness. So I mean, it's been a really unbelievable 2 years since I went back along with a bunch of my friends in August of 2018. And just went to General Furness's change of command, hung out, and watched him take command of the 2nd Marine Division. There was no COVID-19 at the time, and the change of command was a big one. Yeah, it was like, I don't know how many thousand Marines were out there. I'd never seen a change of command that big. I thought it was awesome. Now, I know some people aren't into parades, but I like it when the Marine Corps rolls out its pageantry. I mean, the history of the 2nd Marine Division, it's pretty impressive stuff. So, it was cool. It was cool. But, I mean, the coolest is, you know, you're there with friends and guys. We're in Afghanistan and Iraq together. And then people you don't expect show up. And it's just an awesome experience. So he will give up the 2nd Marine Division tomorrow. And so go see him do that. And pay my respects and see a bunch of friends and whatnot. So it should be an interesting but fast trip. So, and then in the meantime, on the flight there and on the flight back, I'll have the opportunity to work on Post-Traumatic Winning, the movie. Yeah, I don't like calling it the video, the movie. And so I hope to have that finished by Monday, at least kind of the first iteration of it. So anyhow, so I've been working on that. And then I got somebody emailed me this morning, texted me and said, hey, are you ready to share your book with me so we can work on it? All right. Uh-oh. So that going on. I talked about yesterday. Something I saw. Now, we talk about the media here on a regular basis, right? And so I talked about a producer for MSNBC, and her name is Ariana Picari. Now, she resigned. And she resigned and said, the news business is cancer, quoting a news industry person. And she said, very successful person, it's a cancer and there is no cure. She says the cancer threatens the country. So she wrote on her website, she wrote why she was leaving. Now, as the media will do, right, so she's an MSNBC person, right? So you would have conservative outlets jump on that and say, we told you they don't tell the truth. And so just in case you thought she was talking to a segment of the about this, a segment of the media, she wrote a second letter, and I'll go over that to with you. But on her Twitter feed, and I would tell you, her name, Ariana Picari, all right, Arianapekary, okay? Now, I would tell you, if you're a Twitter person, follow her. There's another person that you should follow, all right? Her name is Bari Weiss, okay? Bariweiss. And she resigned as an op-ed editor for the New York Times for the same reason, okay? And the reason I say you should follow them on Twitter is because not sure what either one will do professionally in their lives, but that's the direction that the news business needs to go, and the things they get involved in are things that I would hope would be a commercial success, because what they're saying is balanced reporting and news is important, not simply chasing ratings and other bullshit. So we've talked about stuff like this, and Alex Hollings talks about it with us all the time because he's in that business, right? This is a story out of the New York Daily News. Now, the New York Post is the conservative paper. I don't know if the Daily News is the lib rag in New York City, but it might be. But I don't really care because she, Ariana Picari, right, posted this and said thank you on her Twitter feed. Okay, headline, XMSN producer pens back-to-back posts saying MSNBC and Fox News let ratings stoke, quote, division. Former MSNBC producer Ariana Picari has issued blistering back-to-back statements criticizing both her ex-network, MSNBC, and Fox News for letting ratings control coverage. In her first post that went viral on Monday, Picari said she felt compelled to quit her job as a producer on MSNBC's second most watched program, The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, because the network's rating scheme forces skilled journalists to make bad decisions on a daily basis. Her last day was July 24th. Quote, It's possible that I'm more sensitive to the editorial process due to my background in public radio, where no decision I ever witnessed was predicated on how a topic or a guest would rate, quote unquote, she wrote. Picari didn't mention Fox News by name in her original post, but said everyone in the commercial broadcast news industry is doing the exact same thing. And then here's a statement about cancer. This cancer stokes national division, even in the middle of a civil rights crisis. The model blocks diversity of thought and content because the networks have incentive to amplify fringe voices and events at the expense of others, all because it pumps up ratings. On Tuesday, she issued the following statement calling out Fox News. Let me go to what she says. Okay, so I read her little note yesterday. Let me read the note from 2 days ago. Let me read the note from yesterday. This it's entitled "Follow Up and a Note About Ideology." First, now the reason I think this is so significant is, you know, hopefully it leads to more and more journalists standing up and saying, no, this is bullshit, man. This is not the news of the day. This is what gets our producers and our executive producers their bonuses. This is all linked to clicks and ratings, right? That feed that beast. It is not reflective of what's going on in America, right? You've heard me say that for years. What you see on the nightly news is not your country. It's not my country. It's not the world. It is the most sensational shit that they can shove in front of you to get you to click to make the case for their increased rating fees, right? Advertising fees and their bonuses. That's what that is. It is a danger to this democracy because the truth is irrelevant. Okay, so now you know why this is important. Okay, here she goes. First, thank you to everyone for your responses. I'm overwhelmed, surprised, and heartened by your reaction. Over the past couple of years, I was starting to think that people don't care about the news, inside the industry or out. But you do care. And that gives me enormous hope that change can and will happen. And there is no way I can do this by myself, so I welcome all the moral support. Second, I feel the need to say something about how Fox News reported my story yesterday. The reporter contacted me for an interview. To be honest, I wasn't inclined to do an interview with Fox for all the reasons I outlined in the piece. I don't know if I can trust them, because again, like MSNBC, their job is to rouse the audience. I hadn't responded yet when they posted their story anyway. As it turns out, Fox News inadvertently proved me right. My concern, clearly stated in the post, is that the entire news industry, because each outlet uses the same funding model. That includes Fox News, of course. But they couldn't help but to turn my statement into a divisive piece of clickbait, right? Which is the game, right? Which is the game we've talked about for years. The headline skewed the intention of my piece, and they removed almost all of the context in which I explained the systemic nature of the problem. That is unfortunate, but not surprising. I regret if my piece was presented as an attack on a single network, but that only gives me motivation to continue on this new path. It's just another example of the division I'm trying to alleviate. My purpose isn't to drive away from the industry, but to raise awareness as a first step. We all deserve better, and we can do better. Lastly, on this point, I have to emphasize that my concerns are not ideological in nature. My concerns are economic. The flawed structure of the industry affects everyone. And that means everyone, red state, blue state, purple, whatever. My goal is to work to create a fair arena for discussion, debate, and reliable information. What a thought, huh? And that's why you should follow her. That's why you should follow her on Twitter. Because we don't have that now, right? We don't have that. She goes on, thoughtful, independent voices should be promoted. I firmly believe that our democracy will not succeed otherwise. Please keep sending your thoughts and reactions. There is so much more I have to share with you. I hope to have a plan very soon, and I will let you know when that happens. You all are hungrier to address this problem than I thought. Also, please note, I'm in the middle of my move, so I'm not yet able to respond to everyone, but I will get to you. I apologize for the delay. It means a lot that you took the time to find me and to write, so I will get back to you. Thank you, Ariana. So anyhow, talk about a breath of fresh air. Okay? The truth, articulate discourse, actual factual news. I mean, that's what journalism is supposed to be about. But it's a sick as, I won't use the F word this morning, it's not even what. 8:20. It just turned 8:20. I'll try to refrain from speaking in my normal vernacular. Just a little bit of sunshine in a world of darkness and despair. I am trying to find an Amtraker, and my number two son Patrick found one, but I haven't heard from him this morning. So. And what I would like to do is what Jeff Kenney did. Jeff Kenney talked about the operational considerations for employment, like who makes the decisions, how do they go? And then what I'm looking for is a crewman. And again, not to talk about the accident per se, but you know, how do these things work? Can you explain the bilge pump system? Can you explain the hatch system. Is it in fact true that once you're in 3 meters of water, you can't get those hatches open? And if you can't get those hatches open, does that mean there's no way out? I mean, to me, I'd find that amazing. If there's no way to mechanically open that back door in order to get out, I mean, to me, I don't know enough about Amtrak's to answer those questions. So I want to get to the, you know, to understand how is this thing a survivable thing? And if it was the case that you couldn't survive, then why aren't they traveling with the, you know, with those hatches open? So in case something does happen, you can get out. So anyway, I don't know the answers to that stuff. So Patrick's assisting me, trying to find somebody because he just got out of the Marine Corps a little, 15 months ago or so. And so he's got a lot of friends, platoon commanders, guys who got out too. And so anyway, so we're doing that. So what we'll do today in a week where I'm doing some abbreviated shows is we'll check news headlines, hang out for about an hour. And if I don't hear from anybody, that'll be it for the day. So good morning to you on a Wednesday. I did a bunch of shooting yesterday. That was fun. Up in farm country in Sacramento. And so that was a good time. And so good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps band makes it official. And again, hold on, email. Matt, could you spell her name one more time? She has got a website. Okay, her name is spelled Ariana, A-R-I-A-N-A, Picari, P-E-K-A-R-Y. So, and her website, where you can find her Twitter, and she's on Instagram as well. So, her website's called arianapicari.net. So, you can you go ahead and click on that. And you can, she's an award-winning public radio and TV producer dedicated to telling stories with civic consequences. And it says, see some of the stories here. Here's a couple. News Emmy nomination, outstanding news discussion and analysis, The Hidden City in 2017. I don't know what that is. RFK Journalism Award, Radio Documentary, An Occupational Hazard, Rape in the Military, 2013. And then another thing she did, Stories from Third Med, Surviving a Jungle Emergency Room. So anyway, interesting girl, but a perspective that I think... something that needs to change. Two things I would tell you that I believe that needs to change to make the democracy better. One is the way we, well, actually three things. One, the way we vote. You know, I saw President Obama speaking at John Lewis's funeral, and he said some things that I thought were very good. Why isn't Election Day a national holiday in the United States? Why is it on a Saturday when the majority of people are not working? So we all have a greater opportunity to go vote. Why not? Why not? So that's, you know, that's one of the things that we could, that I think needs to happen. Two, we need a media that will tell the truth and is committed to articulate discourse in this country. No, we don't have that. We don't have that. And three, we need to reform the way elections are financed. So, I mean, I don't think we need to run elections for 4 years, right? So the next election cycle begins on the second week in November. Come on. I mean, it's just old and stupid. You know, go through the nomination process, have a series of public debates, and we should vote as citizens. But when you have the ability of people that can manipulate the system you know, both conservatives and liberal do it. To me, that's wrong. That compromises the power of the electorate. And that's what this is supposed to be about. You're not supposed to be able to buy the election. So anyhow, I think that there needs to be additional financial reforms, right? One of the biggest ones is limiting what corporations can spend. And I want to say what the McCain-Feingold Act did that, and then the Supreme Court struck it down, which I didn't think was good. But anyway, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. This is dedicated to my cousin Tom. You know, my cousin Tom is kind of like my brother, so that would mean like his wife's like my sister-in-law. She certainly treats me like her brother-in-law. Yeah. She beats me like a rented mule. And my nephew Joe and his girlfriend Hannah. I had a good time in Sacramento, and they are incredible parts of my family. So this is dedicated to them on Wednesday.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Jack Riley, we concluded last week. Yeah. I've got to get him on. So I've been busy and so is he. So you'll at some point we'll talk to him about how he felt about Jack Riley week. But I have to tell you, I had so many people reach out to me and say, "Hey Mac, wow. That guy is absolutely amazing." And you know what? And he is. So if you missed those interviews, make sure you go back and check them out. They're certainly worth your time. You know, I will probably listen to one or two while I'm traveling tomorrow. Or I might not be able to because I might be editing audio. So it depends. But I take that back. I'll probably be editing audio, so I might not be able to do that. But I will shortly. All right, weather in the news here. Especially on the east coast of the United States, where so far nothing, not too much, too crazy has happened. Currently sunny and 82 in Quantico with no mention of a weather warning. Down the coast of Camp Lejeune, they're having thunderstorms. And current temperature is 81. Other than that, there's no weather warnings, right? They had a bunch of them yesterday. Currently in 29 Palms, partly cloudy in 84. Camp Pendleton, clouds in 68. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dawn breaking, cloudy in 74. Okinawa, dark cloudy in 84. Afghanistan, evening, clear in 94. This is a whole series of fours. This is unbelievable. Okay, follow me. Camp Smith in Hawaii, 74. Okinawa, 84. Afghanistan, 94. And this is no bullshit. What do you think Ramadi is in Iraq? 104. Go figure. Anyway, currently here at the home of Almarin Radio, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is cloudy and 67. Looking for a high of 72 beautiful degrees today. Tomorrow, 71, Friday, 73, Saturday, 74, Sunday, 74. So it's been a pretty moderate summer. Yeah. Global warming. One never knows these days. So on that note, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines. More of Almarin Radio coming up next right here on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Top story, it's not at the top of the fold, but it's the top story nonetheless. The Navy yesterday located the sunken Amtrak off the coast of California. Bodies of service members who were aboard an assault amphibious vehicle last week when it sank during a training exercise off the California coast have been found, the Marine Corps announced on Tuesday. The location of the vehicle was identified Monday by officials with the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit. And again, I mean, it, as Jeff Kenney said when we spoke on Monday, the you know, they knew where it went down, and it went down in about 600 feet of water, too deep for any divers to get to. So it took a day to get the right assets there. And so they so it has been located. If you haven't heard the story, 15 Marines were 15 Marines and one sailor off in the 15th MU were on the Amtrak when it began to take water Thursday evening. They had just completed training on San Clemente Island. 8 Marines were rescued from the sinking vehicle. 1 died at the scene. 2 were sent to a hospital in critical condition. And 7 Marines and the lone sailor or corpsman were missing in the vehicle that was recovered yesterday. The quote from the statement, the U.S. Navy's Undersea Rescue Command confirmed that human remains have also been identified using their underwater remotely operated video systems from the merchant vessel Dominator, a ship specializing in undersea search and rescue. The Navy is now working to recover the remains of the service members and raise the vehicle. The statement did not say how many remains were found. The equipment needed to get the vehicle off the seafloor will be at the location by the end of the week, according to the Marine Corps. The vehicle weighs about 26 tons and is actually in about 385 feet of water, almost a mile from the island of San Clemente, according to the statement. So that is the lead story about an awful accident off the coast of San Clemente Island. An Army reservist from Virginia becomes the 4th military death from coronavirus. 61 years old, Again, one member of the active duty DOD has died, a Navy chief from the USS Theodore Roosevelt. Everybody else has been a reservist. Not that reservists' lives are any different in terms of value, but in terms of how the DOD handles it, and I think reservists are civilians in this case, right? And unless they're mobilized and doing military stuff, in my opinion, I would categorize them as, you know, they're more civilian than they are military. More headlines. Stars and Stripes is absolutely enamored with the coronavirus. Coronavirus spreads to more U.S. bases on Okinawa as local cases continue to rise. Historians say, because we're getting to the time of the year where anniversaries for Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right, are observed, and so there's always a discussion about that. This article is from Stars and Stripes. In the spring and summer of 1945, American politicians, generals, and scientists pondered how best to use the terrible power of the atomic bomb created by the Manhattan Project in New Mexico. They deliberated, killing tens of thousands of civilians to end the war with Japan, attacks finally carried out on the president's authority. It's been 75 years since the U.S. Army Air... It was the U.S. Army Air Corps, not the U.S. Army Air Force, dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki on August 6th and August 9th in 1945. Both cities were basically leveled. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed or injured. After the Nagasaki bombing, Japanese realized further resistance was futile. They surrendered, but only on the condition that the emperor retain his throne. The battleship Missouri steamed into Tokyo Harbor. The surrender documents were signed. General Douglas MacArthur called it good, and the rest is history. Not so fast. Alex Wellerstein, a historian of science at the Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey, author and blogger on atomic bomb history, said time has smoothed the wrinkles and simplified the facts that are often taught about the first and so far the only wartime use of atomic weapons. The difficulty of these sort of simple ways of understanding it, or ways of framing it, the first one is just not historically how people thought about it at the time, he said in a phone interview. It wasn't seen as this big deliberation, this big debate. That's a later framing of it that was put in order to justify having used the bombs. Within the population that day in Hiroshima, site of a military depot, 31,000 Japanese troops, thousands of Koreans forced laborers fortifying the city, and a handful of U.S. prisoners of war, said Alex Carr, the official historian at Los Alamos National Laboratory in Los Alamos, New Mexico, where the bomb was designed and built. The bomb fell near the center of the city, where Major Tom Farabee, the bombardier aboard the B-29 superfortress Enola Gay, had aimed it. At Nagasaki, however, the bomb fell wide of its intended mark and detonated over the Mitsubishi Nagasaki arms factories where, Carr said, the torpedoes employed at Pearl Harbor were likely manufactured. These losses hastened the war's conclusion, but were not solely responsible for it, Wellerstein and Carr said. Likewise, other misconceptions form a familiar story surrounding the bombing. For example, not much deliberation went into using the bomb. Other historians hold the same view, including Carr. He cited a paper by historian Barton Bernstein of Stanford University from 2005. He said it wasn't a decision so much as the implementation of an assumption. And I really do think that was the case looking back on this. I've never read anything that said it was widely debated. I mean, maybe I don't know where that exists, but I've never read that. The scale of momentum of the war dictated using the bombs, Carr said. Every day, hundreds of Americans died in combat. Every 500-plane raid launched by the United States Army Air Corps over Tokyo put hundreds of airmen in harm's way, and I would add, and killed a lot of civilians. During peak fighting on the Eastern Front, tens of thousands of Soviet troops and civilians died daily, and thousands of Americans were expected to die in an invasion of the Japanese homeland. No. The casualties, that's to me the thing that even in this article isn't articulated very well. The casualties expected in the invasion of mainland Japan were in the millions. Hundreds of thousands of Americans. Not thousands. Yeah, I think in retrospect, we want to make it to seem something different. In fact, I've told this story before, but my daughter was involved in a debate, and one of the things they were debating, they could possibly debate, was and the debate was about, do the ends justify the means? And so I think she was debating that they don't. And the other side was debating that they do. And so we were talking, and I said, well, Colleen, one of the things you need to know is that, ultimately, dropping the atomic bomb was a humane act. You can imagine how my 16-year-old daughter looked at me. She looked at me, and she said, what? I said, yeah. I said, okay, I'm going to give you an assignment. She said, okay. Although there was absolutely no enthusiasm for the assignment, I might add. I said, I want you to look up the forecast for casualties. And I think it was called Operation Torch, right? Is that what it was? Operation Torch. No, wrong one. Oops. U.S. invasion of Japan plan. Operation Downfall. That sounds like James Bond. That was Skyfall. Casualty estimates. So if you just do a search on that, okay. And I'll just read you the first thing that comes up. So I told Colleen, this is what I want you to do research on. I said, so ultimately, dropping those bombs led to less loss of life because it ended the war. She said, okay. So this is the first thing that comes up. Admiral Leahy estimated that the invasion would cost 268,000 casualties. Personnel at the Navy Department estimated that the total loss to America would be 1.7 million, right? That's killed and wounded, and 4 million with 400,000 to 800,000 deaths. The same department estimated that there would be 10 million Japanese casualties. Yeah, so how long do you think they debated that in the 40s? Nothing. They spent no time on it. Nonetheless, it is interesting, right? I mean, this time of year. So you see these things, and I think it's interesting. So that in the news. The Megan Eckstein wrote a piece in USNI News. Navy Marines locate sunken AAV and human remains. I'm sure she based hers. Let me just see if there's any quotes other than that which came out of the came out of the press release. There is not. So, top stories in Marine Corps Times today. There's a big deal about this this Colin Kaepernick jersey that somehow or other has been linked to the SEALs at some museum. Right, so update of a story. This is by James Laporta of the Associated Press. The commander of the Navy SEAL said the unit will suspend its support of the National Navy SEAL Museum, a nonprofit organization not overseen by the military, after video surfaced online of dogs attacking a man wearing a Colin Kaepernick jersey during a demonstration. Right? Quote, each and every one of us serves to protect our fellow Americans, all Americans, even the perception that our commitment to serving the men and women of this nation is applied unevenly is destructive, Rear Admiral Colin Green, who, it's been a miracle Colin Green will serve out his time, because he attempted to take away, did he get his rank restored? Is he a chief? Is he a petty officer? I think he's a petty officer. Petty Officer Gallagher's trident, right? So I didn't think he would survive, but he has. He added, we will revisit our relationship with museums when I'm convinced they have the necessary, with the museum when I'm convinced they've made the necessary changes to ensure this type of behavior does not exist again. Well, the root of the behavior is, right? Just stand up for the national anthem, man. Okay? I think you'll find Marines, sailors, soldiers, airmen, Coast Guardsmen, all committed, right, to looking at race as an issue in the United States. Absolutely respectful of it. And the only way you can call attention is to being disrespectful to the flag we fight for. And that 7,052 service members that have been killed have been buried under. So, yeah, forgive me for not being pissed. Like, unprofessional. I wouldn't want to be associated with it either. But Colin Kaepernick's disrespectful. And there's no two ways about it. That's the best way that you could do it. Nice. Anyway, not to get hung up on that. There's another story that caught my eye, right? Pentagon nominee slams the Navy's fleet plans as not a credible document. The Navy, which can't seem to do anything right, okay, which seems to do very little right, all right? The U.S. Navy's path to 355 ships was unrealistic, prompting the Pentagon to delay the release of the Navy's annual 30-year shipbuilding plan. The presumptive incoming head of the Office of the Secretary of Defense's in-house think tank told Senate lawmakers on Tuesday. The Navy is required to submit to Congress a 30-year plan for shipbuilding with its budget, but it did not do so this year, which has raised consternation among lawmakers of both parties who have been pushing for a larger fleet to meet what they see as rising threat from China. But John Whitley, Trump's nominee to be the director of the Pentagon's influential Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office, told the Senate Armed Service Committee that the Navy plan wasn't rooted in fiscal realities, adding, it's not a credible document. Now, what should be concerning, disconcerting for Marines that read that is, we're supposed to get a whole new series of ships built for us? This is, like, not very good. This is not very good. Right? It wasn't a credible document. And that's not like I had disagreements with some of the things that got put forward in there. When it's not a credible document, that's like what did he just say? Did I hear him say it wasn't a credible document? Yeah, you heard him say that. He goes on. It assumed there were resource constraints for 5 years and then assumed there were no resource constraints, Whitley said. And what Mark Esper was concerned about was that wasn't a credible document. That's why he held it. The secretary has said he's incredibly committed to a 355-ship Navy. His belief is that the number should be north of 355. Now, there's a whole series of footnotes that go with that. Does that count manned systems and unmanned systems? Right? story goes on. What he tasked the Navy and CAPE to do, right? So CAPE would be the Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office to do. What I would do, if confirmed, is be working with the Navy to get a credible path to a number, to that number, as quickly as possible, and that's north of 355. The 30-year shipbuilding plan got caught up in Pentagon politics after an Office of Management and Budget memo sent to the Pentagon ahead of the FY21 budget submission asked why the forthcoming budget shrank the size of the Navy through early ship decommissionings and curtailed shipbuilding instead of going to 355 ships, as President Trump campaigned on. Unbelievable. So again, I'm not impressed with Admiral Gilday, right? Is he unscrewing this stuff, or is he making it all worse? The Navy. All right, top five stories in early bird, and then we're done for the day. Number one, Secretary Pompeo says threats to U.S. and Afghanistan have been raised with Russian officials. These are the same stories as yesterday. So guess what? That's right. We're done. Yeah. Early day, boys and girls. Early day, boys and girls. Let me read you a few headlines from the Wall Street Journal. Beirut explosion. Probe focuses on why tons of explosives were in storage. Yeah, this story, I mean, I was traveling yesterday and I was shooting yesterday, so I didn't see a lot of it, but I mean, this is amazing. Rescue workers search for survivors from the blast Tuesday that killed more than 100, injured thousands, and caused widespread damage. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. The explosion at the warehouse appeared to have been triggered by a fire. The depot held highly explosive material identified as ammonium nitrate that had been deposited there, likely due to inaction and negligence. The ammonium nitrate had entered the Beirut port on board the Moldavian-flagged Rojas vessel that set sail for Mozambique from Georgia in 2013, according to a senior Lebanese politician. A shipping industry newsletter in 2015 said the vessel carrying 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate had been forced to dock in Beirut due to technical problems and was abandoned there by its owners. Owing to the risks associated with retaining the ammonium nitrate on board the vessel, the port authorities discharged the cargo onto the port's warehouses, where the vessel and cargo remain to date in port awaiting auction and or proper disposal. The Lebanese army said the port authority and customs had repeatedly informed the judiciary of the dangers, but no action was taken. We have to see where the responsibility lies because of the delay. So, yeah. So, that in the news. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Instagram short video feature Reels debuts in U.S. Threats to TikTok mount. Yeah, TikTok all over the news, in case you don't know. The University of Connecticut is the first major university to cancel its football season. The acting State Department watchdog resigns. Stephen Ackard, who has served as the acting State Department Inspector General since May, has resigned his post and plans to join a private sector company, according to a press release. If you didn't see this, this is kind of interesting. Kodak, you know, stories about Kodak was reinventing itself, right? Lawmakers seek records on planned Kodak loan. Letter to CEO Jim Constanenza highlights concerns about Kodak's lack of pharmaceutical experience and stock option grants made to executives. So what happened was the price of Kodak went up like 2,000%. Yeah. All right. So, on Monday, Kodak was selling for $2 a share. Okay. The shares then surged to $60 a share. And then by Wednesday, they had settled at $15 a share. So there's now an investigation, as well there should be, into all of that. The all right, let me read you a couple emails. Seals, dogs, and has-been quarterbacks. This is from Ohio Man. Ohio Man's got a daughter. She's a surface warfare officer in the Navy, in case you don't know that. Half, and I'd argue more, of the country has written off Kaepernick as irrelevant. Thanks to Roger Goodell's virtue signaling video immediately after Floyd's death, Kaepernick is now elevated to an untouchable status. Now we go back a year, do an investigation, and start canceling people within military circles. Incredible. Yeah. The whole cancel event. It's amazing to watch. It's amazing to watch. But like today, right, her name is Ariana Picari. There is reason to hope. Follow her on Twitter, right, and track what she does. And then make sure you subscribe to it. Make sure you support it with your views. And that's the only way. The only way that this is going to change is if there is some sort of commercially viable news programming that we watch, and that the ratings of the other, that the other networks suffer. That's the only way it's going to change. And so it's called, in the stock market, it's called flight to quality. Yeah, it's called flight to quality. So that's what we have to hope, that people like Ariana Picari and Barry Weiss, that somehow or other somebody will fund, right? Somebody will fund an apolitical news organization that is commercially successful, that believes in articulate discourse, that believes in the role of journalism in a democracy, and consistently airs both sides of the truth. Wait, both sides of the truth? Consistently airs the truth and isn't afraid, you know, of the discussion around the truth. How about that? That's probably better said. So, but it's got to be, it's got to be able to be commercially successful. Yeah. Next email. The Navy is really struggling, Mac. To hear that the document is not a credible document, that's like worse than just being criticized and being told you don't have a clue. Pretty amazing. Now, I would have to point out to you that this comes on the heels of the Chief of Naval Operations recommending, in his initial recommendation, that the commanding officer of the Roosevelt be reinstated. How many strikes does this guy get before he's gone? You know what? I think that's a good question. I'm not impressed, man. And the Navy doesn't need a dud at the top. So he better get his shit together. And that's my opinion, anyway. That's my opinion. That, you know, look, I mean, he's got a big job, and in that this crisis in the Navy has been brewing for a long time. And it stems from general lack of discipline. Navy's an easier branch of the military to go in, you know, stay away from the Marine Corps. You know, after that, you know, take a pick. But you know what? You know, you're not going to be too taxed. You'll get your benefits, hang out in the Navy, you know. Going to be a good, pretty easy, you know, existence. The Navy's got to get beyond that. The Navy needs to adopt, maybe you could be one of us, the few, the proud, the sailors. Yeah, they should start with, hey, before we even roll this shit, we want to apologize to the Marine Corps, but this is where we're at, boys and girls, right? The Navy just got difficult. Maybe you could be one of us. And then, like, people doing push-ups and jumping in the mud and jumping in cold water and shit like that. Yeah, join the Navy, be a baller or whatever. Can't say that, but whatever the gender-neutral equivalent, right? And so you would do that because this, honestly, no bueno. So here's another one. Mac, I tuned in the other day, and at the start of the show, it was different. And then I had to hop off before you started talking because I got a phone call, and I never got what that was. All right. I can explain that to you because I produce the show. I'm not just the talent on the show. I actually produce it. Okay, so this was the open the other day, right? Here's the idea.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Okay, so what that is that's the audio from the video of General Monday's funeral. So what has happened in the video is that they've had the religious service for General Monday. And with the marching companies from 8th and I out in front of a small church in a small North Carolina city, and the name of it escapes me, you see his casket come down the steps. You see the commandant there, the sergeant major of the Marine Corps, a number of general officers are there. A whole bunch of them are. You see the Monday family to include, I think General Monday now, the son of, he's a 3-star or a 2-star. But anyway, he's there. I think he's a colonel at the time. And so the Monday family is there. And then what happens is the casket gets placed in the hearse, and they walk to the cemetery. So what you see is, you know, I believe it's a drum and bugle corps, the Marine Corps band, right? They're in the front, and the marching companies behind them, right? And they are formed up. And they begin to the march to the cemetery. So it's the marching, it's the band, the marching companies, the hearse, the pallbearers, and the minister, a lady that walks in the procession, followed by the family. Okay, so that's what this is. That's what this music is too. And if you find that day, if you look at it, you can see the video. The link to the video is in there. And I, for whatever reason, I find it striking. I find, there's nothing like the Marine Corps band, the drum and bugle corps, the Marine Corps band, our marching companies. And then you see it in a small town where it just isn't. And you see us roll out our pageantry in the hometown. And ultimately the burial site of one of the commandants of the Marine Corps. And I think it's awesome, right? So I'll play it again just because I like it. So this is how the show opened the other day. And I get fired up for it too, just so you know.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Now, I love that fanfare. I don't know what the hell it is, but let me tell you. So if you're just walking through that city and you hear that, you don't know what the hell's going on, but something big is about to happen, right? That's the truth, right? You hear that? Like, what's going on here, man? What is going on here? So no matter what comes behind it, and then the song is Onward Christian Soldiers. So here it is again, the fanfare, and then Onward Christian Soldiers here. Yeah! Okay, and now what you have to – here's the shot. The camera's on the sidewalk, and the band is going by. You see the drum major doing his thing. He's got all the battles on that sash that he wears, all the battles the Marine Corps has fought in, right? He's got his jaw set. He's doing his thing. You have the band. You have the drum and bugle, you know, Marines going by. And then you have the marching companies, and they're like iron-jawed. You know, officers with swords, Marines perfect, right? Marching perfect. Their uniforms look perfect, right? It's fucking awesome, I have to tell you. Yeah! Marching companies marching by right now. That shot dissolves in a shot from the cemetery that's elevated that shows the marching companies coming into the cemetery now. And they do like left oblique, then right oblique, then forward march. And it's perfect. It's perfect. Then the hearse, right? The burial detail, the pastor, and the family. I like the end. I should have played it a little bit longer because then you hear command. Anyway, so let me get my motivated ass out of here for the day. That'll do it on a Wednesday. Lynch, Kenny, and Costantini will join me tomorrow. So tune in for that. So we'll talk to those guys. And then on Friday, my daughter-in-law, Susie, will join me again. I'll have a chance to see her tomorrow as I head for North Carolina. So if you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. We'll take a quick break so I can save this audio and then play it again. So it might be 60 seconds. And then what you're going to hear is, I talked about this yesterday, but there's a girl named Ariana Picari. And she stepped out of the whole business of journalism and laid the wood to those jackasses. And so we talk about that. She left MSNBC and said, why I'm leaving. And then you had news organizations like Fox say, oh, you know, we told you so, they suck, we don't. But it's all the same bullshit, right? You just put on a different suit of clothes when you go to Fox as opposed to MSNBC. But it's the same clickbait, bullshit journalism, okay? And she takes it on. So she revisited the issue yesterday to make sure everybody knows that her quarrel, whichever you prefer, is not ideological, right? It is the financial framework of the news, that it's about clickbait. It's about showing you the stupidest people who won't wear their masks in onesies and twosies that some other jackass happens to capture and then send to a news organization and say, check this idiot out. Yeah. So she goes out of her way to say, no, that's not my quarrel. So don't touch that dial. because you want to hear what she has to say. More importantly, when you hear what she has to say and you hear, you know, how to spell her name, go find her on Twitter and go follow her. Go send her a note saying, yo, girlfriend, get after that shit, all right? We're all about it, right? We're Marines. We fight for the truth so we can live the high life. Back in the high life. But tough to live the high life when people are bringing you down with all the lies they tell and the bullshit, right, they throw at the American people. And then one of the things she says, right, is that, so in order to drive these ratings, who do you put on TV? The craziest people, right? That's how AOC and the right-wingers, that's how they get on. Right? That, what are they, like 5% of the population? And where is like 80%? It's under the bell curve. But they can't agree, right? Oh, you mean they might be able to? Interesting. Interesting. All right. So, have a great day. Don't be afraid to get out there and change somebody's life. The way you do that is you look at them and say, hey, can I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you, right? There's this dude named McNamara that's really, really smart. Yeah, it's called kindergarten smart. And that means you copy the kid who flunked kindergarten for the first 2 weeks. Because he knows where the graham crackers are. He knows where the balls are. He knows where everything is. So, on a Wednesday, have a great day. All Marine Radio over and... out.